Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon.
Great to hear your voice.
Thank you. Good to hear yours.
Yes.
Are we all ready to go?
We are all ready to go. It's been a busy busy time here.
A technological challenge?
It's a technological yes.
Miracle that we're on the air.
I think it's a miracle every week that we're on the air. It's great.
Good.
And the phones are ringing off the hook.
Let's answer them.
We're doing something right here.
Yeah.
All right. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. We're going to be talking about everything under the sun today. If you want to email us in the meantime, you can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. And if you don't know our phone number already and you would like to talk with us today, give us a call at 650-723-9010. Again, that's 650-723-9010. All right, Sherry, you ready to talk to people?
I'm ready.
All right. I'd like to welcome Brian from Colorado. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi, Sherry.
Good evening.
Hello. So I've got a quick question, and I think you're just going to hit a home run right off the bat here and get started, you know, in the baseball spirit of things.
All right. Is it that season?
Yeah, I think so. You think there's going to be a game on after your show?
Ah, well, that's a very good point.
A few weeks ago, I've actually tried to call a couple of times recently, but I've always called too late. A few weeks ago, I woke up in the middle of the night, all of a sudden just racked with a horrible guilt over things that had happened literally 35 years ago, things that I have no control over, things that I can do nothing about. I can't even think of a way that I could make amends for these things that I did a long time ago. And I laid there in bed for a couple of hours trying to get back to sleep, and these thoughts were just going through my head. So I was wondering if you could just give a quick reminder about how we would go about practicing with stuff that we have no control over. I mean, I guess you could say we have no control over everything, but stuff that we, you know, that is old and moldy and just, you know, and what can we do? How can we free our minds from this stuff? You know, it literally took me, I don't think I did go back to sleep that night. I just stayed awake the whole night long. So.
And the way you describe it, the thing that we can know is that the person who is there in bed listening to this really had nothing to do with the person who was there when these things happened originally.
Okay.
Can you get a feel for that? I mean, if we go at it from a scientific perspective, there's nothing in your body that is the same person as the person who was there 35
true.
Years ago.
Very true.
So
yep,
it's
only memory. Yep.
It's a memory of a misperception of a belief about something that happened to someone 35 years ago.
Yep.
So I just always like to go to the, you know, kind of logical, reasonable part of it first.
Okay.
I mean, there are so many things that people could have been talking to you about that also happened 35 years ago that you had nothing to do with.
Sure.
So for me, the approach to that is rather than what we're trained to do, conditioned to do, which is identify with someone who's being blamed. So a voice starts in about you. You did this and you did that and this happened and that happened. Yeah? A voice is talking to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you're identifying with the person who's being accused.
Uh-huh.
That's right. I did that. Oh, my God, that was awful.
Yeah.
So in this practice, what we're doing is not identifying with that person. We're identifying with conscious, compassionate awareness.
Yes.
And that conscious, compassionate awareness is reassuring, is comforting, is talking sense to the part of you who is tempted to take all of this personally.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So is that a good, is a good opportunity for like, so you say, or who is this that's, you know, that believes this, or...
Yeah, you can go at
kind of that
all
questioning
kinds of ways. I mean, it's pretty easy to tell who believes it, right? It's the person who feels like garbage.
Yeah.
And so it's possible to be saying to him, hey, you know, that was a long time ago. This, it really has nothing to do with you. You know, you weren't there. This is just rumors. These are things that are being said. The person who's saying these things wasn't there either. Doesn't actually know what happened. So there's really no reason to take this personally. There's no reason to take this on. You don't need to do this. You don't need to listen to it. And in that conversation, that person who is tempted to take it on and feel bad is going to start listening to you, the voice of reason and compassion in this conversation. And it's just going to block out that hateful voice that wants to review all of this awful stuff from the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's also possible from the perspective of conscious, compassionate awareness to engage that hateful voice in a conversation. That's where you would bring in the, so what I hear you saying is you think somebody ought to feel bad about something that happened 35 years ago.
Yeah, with no recourse. I went through the whole thing, like, what recourse would I have? And you know, none.
Which is really, as you can see from staying up all night doing this, a colossal waste of time. And sleep, right? It could help.
Yep.
You didn't have to do any of that.
Yep.
There was nothing for you in it except lack of sleep and feeling bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another thing that might have worked would have been to... You know, say, okay, it's time to go sit on the cushion now.
Yes, yes. So. You can always get up and go meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the next time, what you know is you don't have to entertain any of that.
Okay.
Right? Did it happen before this moment? Well, then there's nothing I can do about it.
Yep.
So there's no reason to have the conversation. What's happening right now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's happening right now is that somebody is getting beaten up. Okay,
yep.
Good. Let's address this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent.
So I've had a lot of luck with, like, waking, if I wake up in the middle of the night in the past, I'll go, boy, I better go to sleep in about 10 minutes or I'm going to have to go sit on the cushion. And then, whoop, I go back to sleep, see?
Yeah.
Because I have done that where I'll get up in the middle of the night and go sit on the cushion for a half hour and then it's like, oh, okay, it's sleep time now.
That's right. Those voices of self-hatred or conditioning. They're not interested in meditation. That's a perfect threat.
Yep, it is.
Now, I tell people often when they're caught up in these horrible loops of that sort of thing, you know, I hate my job, I hate my life, I think I'll kill myself, I don't want to do this, and so what I say to them is, the next time the voices start, just say, you're right, I'm going to quit my job, I'm going to get out of here, I'm going to give everything away, I'm going to the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, does that conversation end in a hurry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I hope you're doing well. I heard you were in Boulder a couple of weeks ago, just a little bit away from me, and I found out I was some kind of private deal or something. But
that's
like,
right.
I didn't hear about this Boulder. She's in Boulder, and I didn't hear about it.
That's right. I was there recording a 6-CD set for Sounds True.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yes, and staying at the beautiful Boulderado Hotel.
Boulderado Hotel, all right.
Is that one of the most spectacular places on Earth?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think Marvelous. It is. So when's your CD coming out?
I think it's January.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'll look forward to that.
So, and we'll be talking about it. I'm sure we'll be talking that one up.
Great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Brian. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Stay tuned to KZSU. Coming up at 5:45 p.m., we have Stanford Baseball. And then from 8 to 10 p.m., we have the Bot of Euphony. Sherry, it's fascinating. I was thinking as you were talking with Brian, the sense that the voices that talk to us are not us.
Yes. And the part I like best about that conversation was the idea that there's no sense in wasting any time on anything from the past And there's no sense in wasting any time on anything from the future.
Mm-hmm.
What's here now?
Yes.
What would you call that? The kind of the secret weapon.
Yes.
What's here now? What's going on now? Well, a person is being beaten up and made to feel bad. Okay, that's what we need to address.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if in fact someone was just telling me about a situation, it's one of those life moments that I personally hope I never have. This woman was by herself, and she pulled up in front of one of those little quick stop places with gas outside, and she pumped the gas.
Yes.
And she went inside to pay, and inside the woman behind the counter was crouched down, and over on one side of the store, a man was beating a woman unto death. There, so it.
Wow.
And the woman who walked through the door, you can picture that, you know, that moment right there, and she says she doesn't know what possessed her, but she yelled at the guy, and he looked up. And he stopped beating the woman, and in that little moment, the woman got away from him, ran, and locked herself in the bathroom. Now, here she is with this guy in a murderous rage, and she's now the target. And he threatened her, and she just kept yelling at him, you know, okay, you want to beat somebody up? Come and beat me up. And he walked toward her and just brushed past her and walked outside.
Wow.
Walked to his car.
Wow.
So, you know, those are the moments that we hope we would rise to that occasion, that we would find that resource of present, conscious, compassionate awareness.
Yes.
And so we can practice in little ways with ourselves, being that sort of heroic figure who's going to come in and say, wait a minute, somebody is being beaten here. We need to take care of this. We're not going to have a conversation about whether or not that woman deserved the beating, right?
Yes.
Because nobody deserves a beating.
Yes.
And so in the same way, with Brian, we don't have to have a conversation about whether this guy should be beaten up, because what he did 35 years ago warrants this kind of treatment. No.
Yes.
No. Whatever happened, it doesn't. A beating is not the answer.
Yes.
And then we can just address, we can just get right there in that, no, this is not okay, we're not going to do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Sherry, the phone lines are just blank, 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 blank here.
Well, let's find out who's on them.
Let's find out who's here. I'd like to welcome Tanya from Los Angeles. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hi.
I'm struggling with food addictions and compulsive eating, and I'm caught in that self-destructive cycle of indulgence and self-punishment that results in all that self-hatred, and I'm working with your book on that topic, There's Nothing Wrong With You, but there's this, in spite of all my efforts at consciousness work, there's the constant state of war that I'm in between the desire for freedom and wellness and the addiction. And so I do all this psychological and spiritual work, and yet no matter what I do, there's the part that simply wants to keep eating all at once, no matter what the consequences on my health or my finances, and it sabotages all of my efforts.
Yep.
And the more consciousness work I do on it, the more I try and bring in compassionate, conscious awareness, the more, you know, it just gets stronger. The the ego wanting just to eat me out of house and home, literally.
eat you to death.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
And it's just escalating stronger and stronger, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions.
Well, I do, as you can probably guess. The first thing, have you done There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat?
No.
Okay, well, I'm hoping that you'll put that on your list.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's powerful, powerful, powerful work. And it's designed to address exactly these kinds of deep issues. The second part of it is, whether you do the retreat or not, that to me this is the attitude of mind that you're going for. You've been doing all of this work to try to make a difference. And what happens to us is, now see if this is true for you, we get discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working so hard at this. I've done all this psychological stuff. I do all this introspective stuff. I do all this spiritual stuff, and it doesn't go away.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And so here's what we're up against. It's going to be necessary for you to say to yourself, and you're going to say it from center, from that place of conscious, compassionate awareness, to that person who struggles so with this issue, who feels so bad about having this issue. You're going to say to her, I don't care if this lasts the rest of our lives. I'm never going to abandon you. You're worth whatever effort has to be made. I'd go through anything to help you. And you've got to mean it.
Compassion no matter what.
Compassion no matter what. So that every day you get up and you look in the mirror and that's the commitment. You're the most important person to me. Embracing you in compassion is what's going to enable me to embrace every other being into the same compassion. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. And then you remind yourself of that all day long. And yes. At the end of the day, when you are brushing your teeth there, for the right before you hop into bed, you say, thank you for this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's where the issues of not deserving that come in. So I think that's what has to be worked on next.
Yep, because what you're going for is the unconditional.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, it can't be, I have all this compassion for you, and if you would stop eating,
right,
then I would really be able to have compassion for you.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's unconditional. It just doesn't matter. You don't have to meet any standards. I just love you. That's all there is to it, and I'll do anything for you. Anything.
Yeah, when I started working with that, with your book, I then started getting afraid that my ego was going to co-opt that whole practice to get away with even more damage.
Yeah,
you know
it
what
will
I
try.
Mean? Uh-huh.
Yeah, it will certainly try. As you know, conditioning will use everything. Everything. So hoping that this work will be an exception to that, it's going to learn the language, it's going to figure out how the process works, and then it's going to get in there and try to use that against you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep, no question about it. So, you know, I go to that thing again of Gandhi and his thing about worthy opponents.
Yes.
Yeah, by the time you're finished with this, there will be nothing that would cause you to go to a place of lack of compassion. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the depth of my struggle has definitely given me a lot more insight and compassion for other people who are caught in their own addictions and my working with them. So,
yeah. Now, here's the thing I want you to keep in mind. Even though the commitment has to be forever, that you will do whatever needs to be done forever to save this person from suffering, and conditioning can only go so far. It escalates, 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 and then one day it's done its worst. It's done everything it can do to you. It's threatened you with everything. It's called you everything. It's fired its biggest round. And then you're going to be on the, you've been peddling, and you get up to the top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have to pedal. When you go down, you know you just coast.
Yeah.
You're going to hit that point where you realize, even though it's still there and mean and nasty and ugly, you've won and it's lost.
And hopefully there's a body still left in the
process. There will be. Yeah, there will be. And there will be plenty of time to take care of yourself beautifully.
And I've heard you occasionally mention compulsive eating. I was wondering if you've had a personal issue with it in your past, or if you were just always referring to other people's when you would bring it up.
Yeah, mostly referring to other people.
Okay.
Yeah, food has never been a big issue in my life. Other addictions have been, but
right.
Not that one.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, are you in L.A.?
Yes.
Okay, then. I hope to see you when I'm down there.
It'll yes.
The Learning Annex and Yoga Villa. So
yes.
Maybe I'll get to see you.
I will keep an eye out for that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Tanya. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Sherry, I'm going to mention your website, which has the archives of this show as well as your schedule for your travels. And that is sherryhuber.com. That's spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. As I mentioned, archives of all of our shows there. And Sherry, you're going to be traveling to Los Angeles in June. And before that, you'll be in New York City, Philadelphia, Harrisburg, and Pittsburgh.
That is correct, doing my northeast swing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So I look forward to seeing people there.
Great. So that's the end of May. And if you want more details about that, go to Sherry's website, and all the information is there. We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. It's been a busy day here. Lots of people calling in. Phones are still ringing. And let me give that number out again. It's 650-723-9010. If you'd like to join our conversation today, we'd love to hear from you. We're hearing from people from all over the country. Sherry, you ready for the next caller here?
I am.
All right. I'd like to welcome John from New York City. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Michael. Hello, Sherry.
Hi, John.
How are you?
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm calling because I'm needing a little encouragement and support, and I normally would never ask for that.
Uh-huh.
So
it's okay, then, isn't it?
It's uncomfortable, but I've been listening to some of the archives, and I came back from a retreat in Murphy's recently, and you know, a lot of changes in my own life, and it's somewhat odd to have a lot of change and yet also feel things are quite similar.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to just, I don't know, I was feeling I was in need of some sort of Sangha aspect to what's been going on for me, and I first wanted to say how grateful I was for the experience of There's Nothing Wrong With You, especially the retreat. It's an extraordinary experience.
It is amazing, isn't it?
I think I'm 40-some-odd years old, and I've been at a sort of low level of depression or anxiety most of my life, and I'm not experiencing that right now.
Wow.
So I consider myself extraordinarily grateful to the experience of what occurred for me up there.
Uh-huh. And, of course, I'm giving big thumbs up to what you're doing right now, because the way to continue that awareness is to stay connected with people who are seeing life from that perspective.
Yeah, that third jewel seems to be, you know, increasingly more valuable, at least to me. My experience of it has changed, so that I really have a sense of that the Sangha being extremely valuable.
Yeah, because if you just try to go from an experience like that back out into the world, the conditioned world of egocentric suffering, with the support for distraction and that sort of thing, you're within a short period of time, no matter how powerful the work is, we're going to be back in those old places.
Well, that's sort of the challenge I'm experiencing, is that I had a very distinct, I've been practicing for 20 some odd years, and I had a very distinct experience of stillness at the retreat that changed my sort of relationship to a lot of the voices, which was, I'm extremely grateful for. But I'm having a lot of challenge in integration in that, on, you know, sort of touching into that space, kind of, I mean, there's a call to me to really want to deepen that, but I live in the world in a way that's not, I'm not a monk. I'm not living in a monastic environment.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really, and where I am, there's not a tremendous amount of, well, there's no, at this point that I know of, no sanghas, at least in the lineage that you're working with.
Uh-huh.
And I'm definitely feeling challenged by the integration aspect of, yeah, you know, of touching into something really still and what that sort of felt like and experienced like, and then sort of going back out and cloaking. It feels like I'm putting on layers of clothing.
Yes.
You know, like busyness. The busyness is like a cloak or something that I keep putting on.
Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to go up against that. It's not impossible. So it's one of those situations where maybe it's something like an addiction we were talking about just a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm addicted to sugar. And I recognize what it's doing to me, and I know that it's not good for me, and so I go somewhere and I have an experience of being without it for a time. I feel great. I feel fantastic. And then I go back out into the world, and I find that it's in most everything, and if I'm not reading labels really carefully, and then I go somewhere and people offer it to me and I really like it, and I'm right back there again. And the tendency, of course, once I'm right back there, is to fall into self-hatred. Right? So now I'm beating myself up, and what's the matter with me? I know better. And that's just part of it. It's a part that we could sidestep if we chose to, but most people don't.
Mm.
So then I go through that for a while, and then I realize this isn't doing me any good. It's beating myself up. So now I just need to recommit. So now I stop eating sugar again, and I go through that process. As I keep going through that process, my commitment deepens. I'm really proving to myself in every possible way and situation that I don't want to eat sugar.
Mm.
And eventually, I don't need to try not to.
Mm. It's an interesting metaphor. I mean, I find myself addicted to stillness.
Uh-huh.
I find myself really drawn toward the practice in that way, and the
life has changed
in that way. I mean,
I would suggest that the opposite. I would suggest that there is an experience of stillness and a longing for it, but the addiction is to the opposite of that.
Interesting, because all my resistance is to the opposite.
That's right. And if you really wanted silence, if you really wanted stillness, then you would set your life up for that.
Well, I did.
And there would be things in your life, times in your life, when it couldn't be there. They would be the exception.
Oh, I see.
So, for instance, for a person such as myself, I spend a lot of time in the world. A lot of time. And wherever I am by myself and I am quiet. When I need to leave that, then I leave that for whatever period of time to do whatever needs to be done, and then I return to it. Now, that was a result of years of, I really love silence and solitude, but, you know, I want to see my friends, and I want to go here, and I want to do that, and I want to participate in that, and I want to learn about that, and I want, okay, and then I want to, you know, maybe I want to watch TV, and I want to, okay?
Mm.
And after a while, enough of those forays, getting it that, no, in fact, I don't want to.
Right.
And when the television is on in the airport, I don't sit there and watch it. I find a place in the airport where there is no television.
Right, right.
Yeah.
My experience, at least since the retreat, has been, a lot of change, a lot of energy. I mean, I'd been very depressed for a long time, and a lot of energy, and a lot of, you know, sort of sense of, you know, how I want things structured in terms of that particular quality. And it sort of, in a certain way, isolated me, and that's one of the sangha aspects. What encouraged me to call today was something you'd written about wanting to, you know, be full bore, but being sort of operating from center. And for me, the challenge is that integration aspect. I'm not really, I'm not sure that my practice, maybe the experience of the retreat is too new, and I'm still integrating being back, but the actual aspect of being able to operate in the world from center is really challenging. And that's,
right.
I guess, the
well,
call for courage.
That was a big part of my little sugar metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, you go out there and you find out, whoa, you know, I'm not being able to do this.
Right.
So then you go back to, all right, then what do I need to do? I need to focus on it, and then you make another foray, and
right.
you get chewed up, and then you go, whoa, okay, I'm not there yet. And you come back, and so it's a constant recognition that this is a process.
Right.
You know, we're never going to get somewhere where we can go to sleep comfortably. It's just never going to happen, thank goodness.
Right.
Yeah. So, all drawn to it, how can I have more of that? How can I have when I'm in the car? Do I need to turn on music, or do I need to turn on the radio, or do I need, or could I have this as a time of silence? You know, I'm going to get something to eat. Now, I could eat with somebody else, or I could take this as an opportunity to be with myself in silence and solitude. And so, kind of a la one less act of violence, you know, each
right.
moment making a choice, each moment bringing conscious awareness. And if I decide, heck, I want to go out with a gang of people here, and it's just social, and I come home and I realize that I'm completely exhausted, good.
Right.
I learned a lot about that.
Right.
Yeah.
How does one find Sangha in the area that one's in through at least your community? Through the community,
well,
at least that I experienced up when I was in Murphy.
Yeah. Well, first of all, of course, you can check in with the monastery and see if they know about anybody in your area.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And then, for a while, you might just have to travel.
Well,
you know, you might have to go to be on retreat or go for a workshop or that sort of thing.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
Again, I'm extraordinarily grateful, and I think the work that you're doing, and especially the work up at the monastery and what the monks are doing, is extraordinarily valuable. And after my experiences there, I recommend it to everyone I know.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing the work.
No, thank you for the encouragement.
Okay. Good
Bye.
You're listening to Open Air with Cher Huber on KZSU Stanford. Coming up later this afternoon, we have a baseball game. No exact time on that yet. Cher, we've had some great callers here today, huh?
We have.
Yeah, it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
Great to hear from
everybody. Pardon me, go ahead.
It's great to hear from everybody all over the country.
Yeah, and this is, of course, what we created this radio show to do.
Exactly.
Exactly what John was talking about.
Yes.
An opportunity for people all over the world, if they want to stay up late enough at night, to be able to be in conversation with other people who are attempting to wake up and end suffering.
Yes.
Because it's kind of hard on a day-to-day basis to make that sort of connection.
Yes.
You know, I'll tell you quickly, before the baseball game starts, I went to, you were there too this weekend. We were at an event for Living Compassion, where we were focusing primarily on the Peace Project in Assisi.
Yes.
And I went down today to a little local store here and ordered a bunch of buttons. They're white buttons, you know, pins, you know, like the 60s. You know how we used to wear those in the 60s?
Yes.
Well, you don't remember that, but you see pictures of people with
yes.
pins on.
Yes.
And it's a white pin, and on it says in black letters, "Tell me your experience of peace."
Yes.
And the way, of course, this happened was a desire to get people, rather than talking to people about peace, to ask people what is their experience. Will you tell me your experience of peace?
Mm-hmm.
So that you get to have your experience of peace and I get to listen to you.
Yes.
And I'm not asking you so that I can talk you into a particular experience. I just want us both, for the time that we are together, to have an experience of peace.
Yes.
And it just reminded me of that sangha, that feeling sometimes that I'm attempting to wake up and end suffering. I'm attempting to practice conscious compassion and awareness, But I go around in the world and I look at all these people and I can't tell that they're doing the same thing.
Yes.
So I created this, I came up with this because I want to start those kinds of conversations with people.
Yes.
And I think if I have that pin on, there are some people who might actually do that. They might actually get in a conversation with me in which they tell me what peace is for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fabulous idea.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Yeah, I can't wait to see them.
Yeah, if you want to talk to people around you, then might as well have a conversation that would be interesting and potentially uplifting.
Yes, yes, yes.
And who knows? Who knows then when you might find a kindred spirit?
Yes.
Somebody else who feels like they would like to have support for conscious, compassionate awareness, but they're looking around and they can't see anybody else who seems to be interested in that, and I bet there are just a bunch of us.
Yes. And I think we might be ready for another uplifting conversation in this moment.
Very good.
I'd like to welcome Emma from Seattle. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi, Emma.
I'm calling because a lot of the reading I do about Buddhism talks about the cessation of desire. And in your books, Sherry, and in listening to the talk show, I can't remember ever hearing you talk about desirelessness or the state of desirelessness or something. And as a matter of fact, you're very, you like when people get what they want, when they're happy, when they're excited, when they're engaged, like that. So I wanted to bring up this subject.
Uh-huh. Where does this desirelessness fit in?
Yes.
Well, that's an interesting one. Of course, I never read about Buddhism, so I have that advantage.
Oh, you're saving yourself a lot of trouble.
That's right. So one of the things that it can happen to us is that we get an idea like that. Now, who is going to get an idea about desirelessness? Well, desire is going to get an idea about desirelessness.
Hmm.
And then we are going to desire desirelessness.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like being attached to non-attachment.
Right.
Yeah. So then what we've done is, in my opinion, okay, it's one little Buddhist opinion, we put ego in charge of getting rid of ego.
Uh-huh.
Which I think you can probably sense just in that it's going to create such an opportunity for self-hatred that it's just kind of awe-inspiring.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because what kind of a Buddhist are you? You know, look at all these things that you just... Well, wasn't that desire? How do you call that desirelessness?
Yeah.
Why didn't you just give up? Because that's never going to happen for you.
That's right.
Okay?
You hit mine real well there. Okay.
In my experience, the person who feels completely accepted is without desire.
Hmm.
So it's simply walking in to the same room through a different door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you picture that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just spent about 3 days with the monks where we were together almost around the clock. And not in a retreat situation, but in a situation where we were kind of doing workshop and communicating a lot and that sort of thing. And that's the thing that we are kind of saying to each other all the time. Isn't it amazing not to want anything other than what we have? Mm-hmm. Any pictures? In other words, to walk around in a state of, I am so lucky. I am so fortunate. I am so blessed. I have everything. I have everything.
Yes.
I want everyone to have everything. I want everyone to feel joy.
Yeah. I have two places in my head at the same time right now.
And are they, what is their relationship?
You'll never be desireless.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You'll never be desireless.
There's the voice of egocentric karmic conditioning.
Right.
Praying.
Right.
It is praying that you will never be without desire. Because
praying.
If you are, you'll be without it.
Uh-huh.
Yep. That's the only thing in the universe that has that as an issue is ego.
Oh. Oh, my God.
You want to work on that one and we'll talk next week?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounded big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks,
work on
Sharon.
That one. Call me next week.
Okay. Will do.
All right. Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Emma. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Coming up, we have Stanford baseball. Sherry, what a great show we had today, huh?
Yes. I love those moments of enlightenment.
Yes.
You know, that kind
yes.
of...
Yes. The long pause.
Yeah, I love those.
And, oh my gosh. Yes.
That's my addiction, as you probably know.
Yes. Yes. It's been a great show. I'd like to thank everyone who's joined us today, all of our listeners, all of our callers, our key man on engineering, Mr. Eric, and on the phones, Michael. They've done a great job here today.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
A great staff, as always.
Yes.
And you, Michael.
Oh, many thanks.
You have done a great job, as always.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
If you want to email us.
Let's do it again next week.
Let's do it again next week. And if you want to contact us before then, send us an email at openair@kzsu.org. Check out Sherry's website. That's sherryhuber.com, spelled CHERIHUBER.com. And on that site, you'll find the archives of this show and Sherry's schedule for her trip to the East Coast and then down to Southern California. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Good night.